You may have seen in this week's issue of the Catholic Herald that our parish is one among several in the diocese participating this weekend in the invitation to serve, an invitation to serve the poor presented by the Society of St. Vincent de Paul. We will hear that invitation given by one of the members of the society here in our parish conference after Holy Communion today. By way of a homily, I thought that it might be appropriate today to speak about St. Vincent himself, who was not actually the founder of the St. Vincent de Paul Society. It was founded a couple of hundred years after he died. But one religious sister who belonged to a congregation that had begun under St. Vincent de Paul's influence was critical in forming the first members of the Society of St. Vincent de Paul, so they took St. Vincent as their patron. I thought it would be interesting to speak about St. Vincent de Paul today for several reasons. In the first place, tomorrow, September 27th, is his feast day. It was the day of his death. That's commonly what is done. A saint's feast is celebrated on the day that he or she enters eternal glory. Secondly, tomorrow is not only his feast day, but it happens to be exactly the 350th anniversary of the day of his death. So this is a special year for the congregations that were founded by St. Vincent, the Congregation of the Mission, the Vincentian Fathers, and also the Daughters of Charity, the sisters who were founded under his direction. But thirdly, and maybe most interestingly, the readings of today's Mass, especially the first reading in the Gospel, could well have been directed precisely to Vincent de Paul in his earlier life. The readings we hear this morning are challenging readings, not to say disturbing ones. In them, there is a very sharp condemnation of indifference to the plight of those who are suffering. The first reading of the Mass today, the prophet Amos says, "Woe to the complacent in Zion." Those who are blandly going about their business, not noticing what is going on around them. According to the prophet Amos, they're lying upon beds of ivory, eating lambs taken from the flock, improvising the music of the harp. And they are not made ill. They are not disturbed. They are not taking any notice of the collapse of Joseph, of what is happening to their countrymen. This is very much the same spirit as we hear in today's gospel, where the Lord tells the story, parable, of the rich man and Lazarus. The rich man, of course, comes to a place of torment in the end. And that would have been easy enough for us to understand if the rich man had stolen what belonged to the poor man and thereby impoverished him, but there's no indication of that in the reading. The condemnation of the rich man would have been clear enough if he had been cruel to Lazarus, if on the way in and out of his house he had kicked Lazarus down the stairs or something. No indication of that in the parable that the Lord tells. Only that the rich man took no notice of Lazarus in his poverty. So, as I say, those readings could well have been addressed directly to St. Vincent de Paul in the earlier part of his life. The story of St. Vincent is a story that has been very, very common in the life of the church. It is very typical of human nature. St. Vincent was the product of an honest, faithful, hardworking family, of very modest means. They were farmers. They eked out a living on the land. St. Vincent was born the third of six children. But his father noticed that this boy is very quick. He is ambitious. He is full of energy. He has a very sharp mind. This one should be educated, in a time, of course, when that was not the universal norm. So the place that one was educated was in the church, basically the only supplier of education in those days. St. Vincent would have been born about 1580. He was sent to some Franciscan friars to receive an education. And of course, once one was educated, the place you could use that education was in the service of God, in the service of the church. Society at that time was very clearly stratified. There was no social mobility to speak of. If you were born poor, you could be pretty darn sure that you would die poor. If your father was a candlestick maker, you would be a candlestick maker. If you happened to be born an aristocrat, well, lucky for you, you would be wealthy your whole life. But there was not much movement up and down, except in the church. Imperfectly, but the church was a meritocracy, where someone who was bright, energetic, ambitious, could do better than his or her parents had done. So that was the life for which St. Vincent was destined. And he was indeed. His father was not a bad judge of his children. Vincent was a very smart boy. He was ordained priest at only 20 years old, which was very young. And he entered the service of the great persons of his day, the nobility, and was given a nice income from an abbey. That was the custom of the day. And, you know, that is in no way to say that he was a bad priest or an insincere priest. I'm sure he was entirely sincere. But he was noticing that there was a good life available in the service of God, and he was not above taking advantage of that. So that was his life for about the first 17 years that he was a priest. But at that moment, 17 years into his priesthood, he was serving a wealthy family. He was tutor to their children and chaplain to them. And this couple were quite serious Christians, and they had a care for the spiritual welfare of the tenants who farmed on their great estates. So when one of these was ill, Father Vincent was sent to attend to this man, to hear his confession, to anoint him. And in hearing his confession, the priest was still a pretty young man, 37. He was horrified to discover that this man had never in his life before that point made a sincere confession. History does not record what the problem was, whether he had concealed his more serious sins or whether he had no intention of conversion of life or what the problem was. But the man himself told that story. He recovered. And afterwards, he reported far and wide that Father Vincent had helped him make a good confession, the first one in his life. So as that word got around, the family that employed St. Vincent wanted him to preach to all their tenants. And as I say, they had very good religious motivations. And so he did that, and then he went on to become a parish priest and was very successful in bringing his people to a religious fervor, to a desire for conversion, for a change of life, to embrace the ideal of the Christian life very zealously. As that happened, St. Vincent was especially conscious that the poor were not well served by the clergy of his time. It was a sort of a market economy in religion, I suppose you could say. The wealthy had chaplains, and the wealthy had religious to tutor their children, and so on. But the poor were not so well served. And so St. Vincent decided he must do that. He founded a congregation, a religious community of men, the Congregation of the Mission, to take care of the people in the country, the poor people in the cities, whose spiritual needs were neglected. He himself became the chaplain to the galley slaves of France, you know, condemned criminals who had to row the boats with the big oars. And his interest in the spiritual needs of the poor became extended to also their material needs. He founded a congregation of sisters with St. Louise de Marillac, who would nurse the poor who were sick, relieve them in their poverty, take food, and so on. And he enlisted women of wealth to be the ladies of charity. They would not be much good going into the slums of the cities, but they were generous in supporting the work of the religious who did that. And so a great movement in favor of the poor, their spiritual welfare and also their material welfare, began with St. Vincent de Paul. Then in the 1830s, when a group of college students in Paris wanted to form a charitable society, they were given their first introduction to serving the poor by a daughter of charity. And so they named their society after St. Vincent, who had founded her congregation. The words of today's gospel and the first reading are very challenging ones. That it is not just a matter of avoiding doing evil, but something much more proactive, as we would say today. I suppose our Lord did not know that word. But today we would say it's something much more proactive, seeing the needs of others as our own, having eyes opened to do that. This is the second of the great commandments, of course, that the Lord taught us on another occasion. Love your neighbor as yourself. None of us needs much instruction in seeing our own needs. We're kind of experts at that for the most part. But to look on the needs of others as our own, that is a perfection of the Christian life. It doesn't come naturally to us, even when we don't, you know, we're not malicious in any way. We're nice people. Think of St. Vincent in the earlier part of his life. There was nothing wrong with his motives or his intentions. But that Christian perfection of looking on the needs of others as your own, that was not yet present. But today we give thanks to God for the work of his grace in the life of St. Vincent, who was able to effect that marvelous change so much in the spirit of today's gospel and the first reading of this Mass. We thank the Lord for the witness that life of St. Vincent gives in the history of the Church, and for the great work that began with him now over 350 years ago. We ask the Lord to help us also to see the needs of others as our own and to be formed in that charity that shines so brightly in the life of St. Vincent de Paul.